Morning, church. We're going to continue in our series on the I Am statements of Jesus from John chapter 10 this morning, looking at two statements this morning. I am the door and I am the good shepherd. So this morning we're going to be talking a lot about the unique relationship between sheep and shepherds. And in reading this week, I was reminded of one of the things that I've always found fascinating about sheep in their ability to follow the voice of a shepherd. In the ancient world, the way that sheep often would be able to get water was that they would go to these watering holes. And usually they were kind of these pretty common spaces that were shared by numerous shepherds, numerous flocks of sheep. And so usually they would go at kind of the same time of day, and they would show up to these watering holes, and there'd be hundreds, maybe thousands of sheep all kind of jostling for position, bumping into each other, running into each other, and it was kind of chaos. It's a little bit crazy. And then after that, maybe they would get some water. Well, they had to wait for everybody else. Then they would try to find some place maybe to get a little bit of grass, get a little rest, chill out for a little bit, maybe get a little bit of food. And it was nuts. You ever watch like videos of it? It's just loud. It's chaotic. All these sheep are just baaing, or however you say that, over and over and over again. And then to leave, what happens is their shepherd just starts to call out, and they just automatically turn and just sort of, I mean, sheep don't move quickly. They sort of lumber along and follow the shepherd. Amidst all the chaos at the watering hole, the loud noises that they are bombarded with, the jostling and jockeying for position to get the water and the food, the shepherd just simply talks, calls out, and the sheep find him and go on their way back to the sheepfold. Life today feels like a watering hole. It's full of chaos. It's full of noise. We're bombarded. Life is full of ill-informed but emotionally driven opinions. We're bombarded with the chaos of noise. Every time we turn on our phones, we put our TVs on, every time we have conversations with folks, we are bombarded and battered. And one common thread that's being espoused over and over again that I keep reading is the remedy that we need is for some transcendent voices. Transcendent voices that can speak clearly on key issues in our society like race and gender and science and politics and economics and actually help us find a path to move forward. This morning, I will not pretend to be one of these transcendent voices. Instead, what I want us to do is hear the voice of the one transcendent voice, the voice of our good shepherd. This morning, we want to be his sheep who hear his voice and follow. So I'm going to begin in John chapter 9 and read the last verse of chapter 9, starting in verse 41 of John chapter 9, and then reading through chapter 10 all the way down to verse 20. John 9, 41. Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they won't follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. And the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold, and I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock and one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, "He has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him?" Pray with me. Father, may we hear the words of your Son this morning. And may your Spirit open our eyes to see and our ears to hear, or that we may clearly and simply hear the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen. Well, before we get into our two I am statements, like usual, we need to look at why on earth does Jesus say this stuff? Well, why is he making these claims about being the door and being the Good Shepherd? In order to understand that, we got to back up and kind of recap how we got from John chapter 8 to John chapter 10. If you were here last week or listening last week, we ended at the end of John chapter 8 with the crowds being ready to basically kill Jesus. They're done with him. They think he's a crazy person and they're kind of sick and tired of him. And then in chapter 9, Jesus isn't fazed by this. He goes out and heals a blind guy, helps him to see, which doesn't really help him much. You would think that that would be a good thing when, you know, you do something good and gracious and kind and loving, like heal someone who can't see. You would think that would endear you to the crowds, but it actually just stirs up all of the religious leaders all the more. They're particularly offended that he heals someone on the Sabbath, and that the person who was once blind doesn't really see that as a problem, but is just grateful that Jesus did it. We find out in John chapter 9 that his parents don't really support him very much, and these religious leaders who are supposed to be caring for his soul, caring for him, actually are called in many ways to bring healing to people like this blind man. They kick him out of the temple, the place of social, economic, and relational and religious coherence, right? Everything is built around being in the synagogue of that day. They kick him out. So Jesus, immediately seeing he's being kicked out, finds him and offers him innocence through faith. And then Jesus makes that summary statement at the end of chapter 9 saying that he is there to open the eyes of the blind, which the Pharisees, of course, overhear because they can't help themselves but want to hear what Jesus is saying so that way they can get angry again. They overhear him say that, and they ask if Jesus is referring to them again. Jesus' response is kind of this little coy answer to them at the end of chapter 9 that if they were blind, they would have no guilt. In essence, they would be forgiven that they knew they were blind and in need of sight. But because they don't think they're blind, their guilt actually remains. Then Jesus continues on in the first 5 verses of chapter 10, because the story doesn't end here, but it just keeps going. They just put a chapter mark here because it was getting too long. But the story really continues from chapter 9 into chapter 10. And what Jesus does in the first 5 verses of chapter 10 is he summarizes Ezekiel 34, a famous chapter from the Old Testament where God promises to be the true shepherd of his people. Well, where the foolish and selfish and indulgent and wicked false shepherd leaders of the day are going to be judged. And the weak sheep are going to be brought in by God's own hand. But we see that they're confused by this. Verse 6, it says, the figure of speech Jesus used with them, right? This imagery of shepherd and sheep, his explaining of Ezekiel 34, they have no clue what he's trying to say. They're utterly confused. And so Jesus, starting in verse 7, explicitly unpacks Ezekiel 34, Psalm 23, and all of the imagery of shepherd and sheep from the Old Testament, which leads us to verse 7 in his first I am statement where Jesus says, I am the door. Now, the imagery of door here is actually almost more like a gate, like this little entryway into a sheepfold. Sheepfolds were surrounded by little rock walls or bush and brush that would keep everything out except for this one way in. And Jesus is saying that he is the only way into the sheepfold of God. If you want to pass in, you have to pass through the door, and he is the door. The imagery here is actually is a picture of a nightly ritual that shepherds had with sheep. Every night, a sheep would come back to the sheepfold. The shepherd would stand there with his rod and hold it out over the door, the gate, the entryway in. And the sheep would have to pass under the rod. Ezekiel 20:37 actually describes it, that one day God is going to be this rod for his sheep. That's what Jesus is referring to. And as they pass under it, the rod checks each and every individual sheep. Make sure they're not hurt. Make sure they're not sick, that they don't look like they haven't been eating or drinking. Checks to make sure that they're actually his sheep and something didn't just wander in. Checks to make sure there aren't wild animals trying to sneak in with the sheep. And checks to make sure that they're all there. Famous story that Jesus tells of the 99 return, but the one's not there and he's got to chase them down. Why? Because the nightly ritual of checking and caring for and protecting the sheep always happens when Jesus is the good shepherd. The picture that Jesus is offering here is that he is the only way in to the sheepfold. To drive this point home, to make it more clear, he adds in verse 8 of John chapter 10 that all who have come before him, all of them are actually just thieves and robbers. They're not ways in. They're not true shepherds. He's actually just quoting Ezekiel 34, verses 2 through 4. It says, shepherds of Israel, right? The leaders of Israel. You've been feeding yourselves. Should not shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat. You clothe yourselves with the wool. You slaughter the fat ones, but you do not feed the sheep. The weak you have not strengthened. The sick you have not healed. The injured you have not bound up. The strayed you have not brought back. The lost you have not sought. And with force and harshness you have ruled them. Jesus is looking at the leaders of the day, and he is making it clear that all other leaders who have come before him, all other shepherds of his day, all of every type of leader in all of human history are merely thieves and robbers if they tell you that they are the way. If they try to deny you entry into the sheepfold of God, they are liars. Thieves, robbers, and later he's going to refer to them as hirelings. That basically, that as soon as adversity comes, if anything hard happens, watch, because they'll run away and abandon you. They're not shepherds. They have been creating their own standards to deny entry into the sheepfold of God. In essence, they're really out to harm sheep. They're nothing more than wolves seeking to attack. In essence, what Jesus is saying is that he healed a blind man, something that the religious leaders should have actually celebrated. These shepherd leaders are in a sense actually called to it, and they should have been filled with gratefulness that a true shepherd is there helping do what they're all called to do. And instead, they want to kick the healed man out from their sheepfold. They want nothing to do with him or with the shepherd who healed him. And Jesus looks at the crowd and says, that sheepfold is no sheepfold at all. There's only one way into the sheepfold. It's through the door that is the great I am, who is standing before your very eyes, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear. And he goes on to then contrast himself directly with the shepherd leaders. It's not just about entry in, but who is going to care for and protect. So Jesus adds in verse 11 that he is the good shepherd. The good shepherd. And by saying the good shepherd, he's not merely contrasting himself with what he is referring to as the bad shepherds, the bad shepherd leaders of his day, but he's claiming to be the one long-awaited good shepherd. So we're going to really understand all that Jesus is actually trying to share with this imagery. We need to do a little bit more Old Testament work. We need to actually unpack a little bit here. What is going on in this shepherd and sheep relationship? The shepherd and sheep dynamic is actually mentioned over 500 times in the Old Testament. Many would argue that it is actually the most prominent imagery for the relationship between God and humanity. And that a Jew who is in this crowd listening to Jesus would have been quite aware of this analogy. They're going to be quite aware of the imagery of shepherd and sheep, and they are going to be bringing much of this Old Testament teaching to this place. So as they hear from Jesus, they actually have these pictures in their mind. And while we don't have time to look at all 500 of these this morning, I do want to take some time to actually look at some of these and feel kind of the weight of how deep the understanding of this relationship would be. And tomorrow, because we're going to go through some of these a little bit quickly this morning. Tomorrow, I'm going to post as many of these as I can. Hopefully, I remember all of them as we go through it. But the dynamic between shepherds and sheep starts all the way back in Genesis chapter 4. The first shepherd that we encounter is Abel. We encounter him as he's bringing a good sacrifice of a sheep to God. And then he's murdered for it. The first time we encounter shepherds and sheep, they both die. Starting a trajectory in the scriptures of a very complicated relationship with death for both shepherd and sheep. Later in Genesis, in chapter 49, 24, as there is this big, epic, sweeping prophecy for the later days for all of Jacob's 12 sons, there's a reference made to God being the shepherd in those final days that will lead and protect Israel. Later on, all of the leaders of Israel are associated with being shepherds. It actually starts in allusions with patriarchs, but they are called to guide and represent and lead the people of God. Moses being kind of the clearest early example in Exodus chapters 2 and 3, Moses is literally a shepherd who is then called by God out of shepherding to then shepherd the people of God. Psalm 77:20 says that God leads his people like a flock by the hand of Moses, his shepherd. Numbers 27:17, it says that the people are going to be scattered when their shepherd, Moses, leaves them. And they need another shepherd, Joshua, to lead them. So they won't be battered, scattered people without leaders to care and protect them. And later, following Joshua, in 2 Samuel 7:7, the judges are then called the shepherds, though they failed mostly. And ultimately, this shepherd leader imagery becomes the imagery for kings, with David being the prototype. In Psalm 78, 70 through 72, it says that God chose David, his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds, from following the nursing lambs. He brought him to shepherd Jacob, his people, Israel, his inheritance. With upright heart, he shepherded them and guided them with his skillful hand. Shepherd here becomes the chief analogy for leading and protecting and guiding God's people for all earthly leaders. And at the same time, all throughout these passages on shepherds and sheep, we see all of these texts, like from Ezekiel 34 and in Jeremiah and many of the prophets, that ironically reveal to us what shepherds are supposed to do by talking about how bad the shepherds of their day are. Talking about how the shepherds have failed to care for the sheep. How the shepherds have actually stolen from them. Have actually turned them into martyrs, have scattered them. And in essence, we learn what shepherds are responsible for. To care to protect, to lead, to represent, to heal, to bring back, to preserve, to strengthen, no matter what, even if it's at the cost of their own life. Shepherds are to care for sheep. The sheep on the other side of this relationship in the Old Testament are completely dependent on shepherds. Complete dependence. In the Old Testament, the sheep are God's particular people, often referred to as Israel or Jacob. There's this idea that they are his flock. Psalm 95:7 says, "He is our God. We are the people of his pasture, the sheep of his hand. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts like Israel did in the wilderness." We are the sheep. This imagery is all over the Psalms. Psalms 23, 28, 68, 74, etc., etc., etc. But it's not just in the Psalms, in the history books, like 1 Kings 22. It's all over the prophets. It's mentioned multiple times in Jeremiah. The imagery permeates the Old Testament, unpacking that we are sheep completely dependent on the shepherd. For the shepherd alone can offer protection and care. We must entrust and be fully dependent. Ezekiel 34 also goes on to share imagery about what happens to the sheep when the shepherds are bad. Right? It talks about bad shepherding and what shepherding should be, but then what happens to the community of sheep when the shepherds disappear and there's no good leaders, there's no one to entrust your lives to? Well, the community goes awry. The sheepfold turns on each other. The sheep start treating each other with superiority, pushing around anyone that they can, trying to find the weak ones and nudging them out so they can get a little bit more water. Just kind of traipsing around on the grass, kind of destroying it so the sheep that come behind them aren't able to eat it, usually just through ignorance or maybe foolishness. And it says they're all persecuted. And many of them even martyred because the community is in a messed up, scattered state because there are no leaders to protect and care. And this is the state that Jesus enters into. Jesus shows up on the scene and actually picks up this imagery of Ezekiel 34. He says that the people of his day are lost, Matthew 15. They're weak and tired, Matthew 9:26, harassed from the outside, deceived from the inside, from the community itself, Matthew 7 and 10. They experience great persecution, and most poignantly and famously in Mark 6:34, it says, "When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them." Why? Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. When Jesus brings up this shepherd-sheep imagery to the crowds, they're not actually confused by the imagery. They don't hear this and think to themselves, "What is he talking about? Why is he talking about shepherds and sheep? I don't understand." No, they definitely were very familiar with the imagery. They were confused with how he is applying it to them. They're confused with how he is applying it to himself. See, the crowds of this day were rightly recognizing that God was ultimately their shepherd. The Jews of that day believed that God was their shepherd, but kind of in this deistic, far away type of way. That God was sort of up there in heaven, and one day he's going to send us this human shepherd who's going to make things a little bit better. A shepherd leader who's going to free us from earthly oppression and allow us to practice our religious freedoms. They're looking basically for somebody who's a little bit better than David or Moses or all the other shepherd leaders of the Old Testament who can kind of help the pretty good leaders of the day be a little bit better and kind of guide them to bring about restoration. That's the expectation. But that's not what Jesus is saying, is it? What Jesus sets up is that we're all needy sheep and that none of us are pretty good. There aren't some decent leaders. There aren't some better sheep than others. We're actually all awaiting the shepherd. We're all harassed, taken advantage of, beaten down, manipulated, broken, needy, hurting, rebellious sheep, bound for death. And we need a human shepherd, yes, but we need one that's far better than Moses or David. We need a shepherd who is transcendent. We need a shepherd who can take us to living waters that won't run out. They can take us to pastures that never dry out, that will feed us with eternal sustenance. We need a shepherd who will chase us down when we try to flee, who will bind us up when we fall, who will guide us to paths of truth and goodness and won't take advantage of us, but will ultimately save us from death, even though it will cost him his own. Yes, we need a human shepherd. We need the best of a human shepherd, but we also need a divine shepherd king who can defeat death and actually give us eternal rest. We don't just need the best. We need a transcendent and eternal shepherd who will not fail us, nor will he deny entry to herding sheep that follow his voice. The heart of Exodus 34 actually explains it clearly when God says in verse 15, "I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep. And I myself will make them lie down." Isaiah 40:11, God will tend his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs, the little ones, into his arms. But Jesus echoes when he says, "Little children, come to me." And he will carry them in his bosom and gently lead those that are with young. For our shepherd is gentle and lowly. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters, and he restores my soul. John 10, Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd." The human and divine, the God-man shepherd king, the long-awaited good shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep. He will bring those in who have not known him, that have been from afar, but they will hear his voice and not harden their hearts, but they will enter through the door. The great I am who gave his life, not because it could be taken from him, but because he freely lays it aside for the sake of the sheep, that they may enter and be loved by the good shepherd forever. Jesus is the great I am, the good shepherd, the God-man, shepherd king, shepherd kings, the long-awaited shepherd king has arrived. Will we hear his voice? Let me read verses 19 and 20 again. The crowd's response. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, "He has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him?" Jesus says that his sheep will hear his voice, and that some will argue that a demon couldn't heal a blind person. Most in the crowd say, "This guy is crazy. He has a demon. Why on earth would we listen to him?" Oh, the ironies. Jesus points out that his sheep will hear his voice. And there is no other way. It's a very divisive and clear statement. We are either sheep, humble, lowly, miserably dependent sheep, or we have no need for him. You're a wolf in sheep's clothing. It is our broken, needy, humble, dependent trust in the shepherd that show we are his sheep that hear his voice. And the question that John leaves with us, as he often does, by giving us the response of the crowd, he's not merely reporting facts, he's giving us an invitation and a question. Will we hear the voice of the good shepherd? Because if we listen to the voice of the good shepherd, there is actually a way forward amidst the tsunami of voices that we are bombarded with today. The voice of the good shepherd calls us to be like sheep, to be gentle and lowly and humble sheep, because to be his sheep is to be like him, where we look at our fellow human being with love, not superiority. Love for a fellow needy sheep who is broken and likewise needs the healing of the shepherd. We view our rights and our freedoms and our privileges in life as providential opportunities to lay them aside, to give them away, and to love someone. We are sheep who follow the shepherd. So when our positions are questioned, our views are attacked, and we are bombarded with opinions, and the noise gets loud, we can actually quietly rest in the protection and care of our good shepherd, listening to his transcendent and gentle voice, and respond in kind with love. Bam wants to go ahead and make their way back up. The final mention of shepherds and sheep is found in Revelation chapter 7, where our call to worship was read from this morning. Just a few verses later, at the end of the chapter, in verse 17, it gives us a picture of a shepherd and sheep for one final time. It says, "For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd. And he will guide them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." The promise here in Revelation chapter 7 is that the good shepherd on that last day, that final time, will lead and protect and guide his sheep all the way to that place of eternal rest. That eternal place of finding water that will never run out. The final healing that we all need. But Revelation 7 also does something quite unique. See, at the end of the story, the shepherd and the sheep, we find that the good shepherd becomes the slain lamb. It's finally revealed to us how the shepherd is actually going to lay down his life. The shepherd is going to become a sheep. The shepherd becomes the one that will represent us, for where the sheep have failed to listen to the voice of the good shepherd, the shepherd becomes the successful sheep, the one who listens, and so can become the sacrifice that we need that Abel foreshadowed all the way back in Genesis chapter 4. See, we deserve the death of the sacrificed sheep in Genesis 4. Revelation 7 reminds us of the amazing humility and grand twist of the good shepherd. He's not merely the perfect, long-awaited good shepherd. He's also the slain lamb who becomes one of us to be slaughtered for us, to be the final death of the sheep that all sheep would hear and find rest. This morning, we are offered the transcendent voice of the good shepherd, the one who offers his life for us. Will we be his sheep that listen? Let's stand and sing together.